Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you here on this Friday. Very excited about our next guest, Hall of Famer Rondé Barber in studio with us. He is in town this weekend. We'll tell you why here in just a few minutes. But Rondé, good to have you. Appreciate you stopping by in studio. Hit that button right there, Jojo. There we go. Welcome. Welcome to Nashville.
Yeah, glad to be in Nashville. Sorry that my my navigator.
The GPS will get you sometimes.
I'm gonna blame it on a user error in this case. If I would have known I was only 5 minutes from the airport, I could have just walked.
But here's the good news. You're not the only one this has happened to.
Oh, okay.
It's happened to a lot of people.
Unfortunately, and when they said that, I'm like, oh, no, the GPS got him.
Oh, so it's your fault. You should have just said we're five minutes from the airport.
But we appreciate you being here and hanging out with us. I know you're in town with Superbook Sports, the Tennessee-Virginia game tomorrow at 11 at Nissan Stadium. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, at the Landshark Bar and Grill at Margaritaville on Broadway, nice. You're going to be hanging out there.
Yeah, I'll be there with Ron, Tennessee legend. I'm a UVA legend, I think, still. It's been a long time since I was at Virginia, back when the program was very, very good. But I haven't been to a UVA game in a long time, so I'm excited to be here. The event at Margaritaville will probably be I'll be drinking a lot.
you might need to.
wondering what happened. Not that, you know, this time of year, hope runs eternal for every program, right? You just never know. The off season is what it is. This is your first real game. And I remember my third year at Virginia, we opened up the football season at Michigan. So 105,000 people. Our stadium was 43,000 at that time in Charlottesville. But we went on the road week one in Michigan and almost beat them. So just saying, anything can happen.
You never know. any given Saturday, any given Sunday. Right. I mean, you went through those games in your career in the NFL, so you're right. You never know.
Never know.
You never know what might happen.
I always love asking this about guys who won Super Bowls. Where's your ring?
Funny you should say that.
Oh, no.
I have no idea.
Oh, no.
And not my fault. We took it out for an event probably a year ago. And right when I got announced into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, me and my wife were like, oh, we should probably find the Super Bowl ring. Might need it that week. And she's like, do you know where it is? I'm like, do you know where it is?
Oh,
I was like,
well,
put it back in the closet. It's somewhere in my closet. And we have a big convoluted junky closet where clothes and I don't know where she put it. She doesn't know where she put it.
Well, there is a guy here lives in Nashville. He was the punter for the Steelers in the 70s who was showing his ring to a girl at a bar and she tried to take it.
Oh.
And that's always asked about that because he finally got it back from her, but I'm always curious because most guys have it on the mantle or they don't know where it is or whatever, but at least you know yours is in your house.
Currently don't know exactly where it is, but I know that it's still in our possession. If that's a fair assessment of
it. Well, I mean, that's good.
Yes.
Right, it is. Let me ask you, how much do you remember about playing a lot of in the NFL certain moments of games? Because I asked you this. There's an iconic moment with Steve McNair playing you guys on Monday Night Football when he took like a quarterback scramble, went 80 yards on a Sunday night. I'm sorry, it was a Sunday Night Football game. Do you remember that?
I don't want to remember that.
I see the look on his face. I think that says it all.
Yeah, I remember playing against McNair. Yeah, the one of the most intimidating quarterbacks I ever stood next to or saw play. He was amazing football player. That he's gone, it's easy to talk about and remember it, but he was not fun to play against. They had big running back, if you remember.
Yeah.
just as big
That's
as
right.
They were a tough team. That was early on in their careers, too. Not fun playing.
Just to see this guy at 6'3", 230, coming right at you with faster than you are, probably.
Well, now guys are built that way. I mean, he was an anomaly, I think, back in that day. That big, could run that fast. He played it. He played Alcorn State.
Alcorn State,
right? And he was that kind of athlete there. But we had never seen quarterbacks that looked like that, that could move like that. Now they're pretty commonplace,
right?
But he was different. He was way ahead of his time for sure, man.
We've referenced the kind of his process a lot because with the Titans drafting Will Levis, mm-hmm. and Malik Willis,
in the last 2 years of, okay, what's the proper way to go about that? And,
right.
And I had the opportunity to work with longtime GM Floyd Reese for several years, and he was always of the belief of, you sit a guy and you let him cook and you let him develop. Steve did that, barely played for his first 2 years, and then they finally gave him the keys to the car. Nowadays, with first-round draft picks making the money that they make, they have to throw him in there. But from your point of view as a corner, as a DB,
yeah.
Do you still think that there's room for a guy to sit and just learn?
I wish more would. You think about Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets is probably a great thing for Zach Wilson, because he showed in his first year that he couldn't handle it, right? And then tried to do it last year. Couldn't handle it. They put in Mike White at towards the end of that year. And you don't want him to give up on a guy that you put all that time in to evaluate and draft. Trey Lance is an even better example, really, right?
Because
he's only had about two or three games under his belt before he got hurt. And then he's replaced and then dealt to Dallas. So I think the Jordan Love path is the right path. And you understand why teams – do put them in early, because you have that small window. But not every quarterback comes in and is Josh Allen. And in fact, Josh Allen, his first year in Buffalo,
he struggled.
Was not very good. I did not think he was and I know that Kristen right here, my friend, is a big Josh Allen fan, but he was – I had my questions about him. And then he turned a year – in a year, he turned into one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So there's different runways for each player. But I'm kind of on your path, man. I think they should wait. It's hard, though, because of the economies of the game now. In all honesty, in order to have a successful team without having a quarterback that costs $40 million and have other players on your team that, the good players on your team take up most of your cap, the quarterback's got to be young. Because as soon as you pay your quarterback, the dynamic changes.
Well, it happened here with Chris Chandler and McNair in 96 and 97. Chris Chandler didn't like McNair because he's taking his job, didn't help him out, didn't mentor him, and then ended up – it caused a big division on that football team, because if it gets out of hand, it gets out of hand big time.
Right. Well, you don't blame Chris Chandler at all, do you? He's looking for looking for career longevity. I mean, because when this goes away, it goes away. It's over.
Right.
But there's that in every franchise, and not only from the players but from the front office. I mean, there's – from my experience not everybody's going to be on the same page. But if you have draft capital and a quarterback, it behooves you at some point to get them onto the football field. So that's why some of the decisions about quarterbacks nowadays seem so curious. You draft a guy in the first round, you think he should play. When they don't, or then they end up somewhere else, you're kind of wondering what the evaluation was. Because obviously whoever drafted him thought he was good enough to play.
Correct.
But then the coach and then the staff and whatever else makes a different decision, and then you're – yeah, it just doesn't seem congruent.
All right, so I got to ask you. Chase and I were talking about this in the 9 o'clock hour. The Super Bowl, all right, against the Raiders. Were you guys really calling out their plays? is this an urban legend? Because I want this to
one
be true
play.
So bad.
We called out one play.
Oh, is that it?
The West Coast system has a play, Sluggo Seam, right? It's what everybody runs. You run a kind of a hitch and go on the outside, and the quarterback's really just trying to get the free safety. In this case, it was Dexter Jackson for us, trying to get the free safety to move toward where he pumped the ball over down the sideline. But if you understand what the concept, the seam guy, the tight end or the receiver who's ever on the other side of the ball, is really where the quarterback wants to go. And it's mostly situational. You kind of know when it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's formation. It's just being prepared. And we were very prepared for that game because to be honest with you, the way they ran their offense was designed perfectly for the way we ran our defense. And so we knew it was coming. Yeah. It's not quite urban legend, but there was one play.
Oh, I love it.
Absolutely knew what they were doing.
Well, we're
it could have been
it.
Some other ones because we had five interceptions. I mean, we kind of, kind of figured them out pretty quickly.
Great. Do you – like, where do you personally put that defense when you're talking – and obviously different eras, different rules, it's hard to answer a question like that. But when you think about – I mean, how many Hall of Famers are on that defense, including yourself?
Four of them now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that game and watching that season and just how fun it was to watch. But where do you rank that defense, when you're thinking of – all-time greats.
All right. It would have been really easy to bet on us back then because we were so consistent, man. We were If you're asking me, we're top one, or two, or three. And you can throw the Steelers out there, the Bears defense of that 1 year, but none of them, even the Ravens with their Super Bowl year, none of them had the longevity that we had.
Right.
We were that same defense, and mostly because we had the same players for like 10 years. We were top 10 defense. You can fact check me. I may be a couple years off, but we were top 10 defense for at least a decade or better parts of a decade, and with the same players. You know, Brooks, Lynch, Zapp, myself, Dexter Jackson, who I just mentioned. We had some other key elements there, Brian Kelly, that stayed together for a long time. And so it made it easy for us to be who we were. And we were simple. We played fast. We were very physical unit because we chose to be. It's like Monty Kiffin, our defensive coordinator, that was the only option we had. You had to be a physical, you had to be fast, you had to be smart to play in it, and we played in it for a long time. So if you ask me, there's not many that can claim to have the level of greatness for as long as we did.
Your DB coach too.
Yeah, we had a pretty good DB coach.
Mike Tomlin.
He's turned into a pretty decent head coach.
When was the first time you heard the standard is the standard? Did he ever say that?
That was very yeah. Standard is a standard. It's true. I mean, and if you buy into it, it's true. I mean, Mike Tomlin, my Mike Tomlin story is I was a free agent in 01 after my rookie contract ran out. Mike T came in as the DB coach while I was a free agent. And Mike Tomlin basically convinced me to stay in Tampa. He's like, what you're doing at nickel, nobody else is doing that. I can't wait to coach you, da da da. Well, as it turns out, nobody wanted me. So I ended up having to go back to Tampa. And that next year, I led the league in interceptions. I had 10 interceptions. I'd only had two in any other year. And,
nice.
And then I had 10. And then the following year after me, my compatriot, Brian Kelly, the other corner on the other side, had 8 and led the league in interceptions. So he had two corners in back-to-back years that led the NFL in interceptions.
Wow.
And then, obviously, we won a Super Bowl that second year. And then 2 years later, he's the defensive coordinator of Minnesota. And a year after that, starts his 17-year tenure in Pittsburgh.
So amazing.
He's an amazing coach, man. He's an amazing man, but amazing coach as well.
He's Rhonde Barber, the Hall of Famer, hanging out with us. You cool to hang through a break?
Mm-hmm.
Come back, talk a little bit more about this Hall of Fame experience.
As long as I don't have to go to Murfreesboro to get back to through the break.
Yeah, no.
My navigator.
We got you here now. Right by
Did
the
you
airport.
Really go to Murfreesboro?
We went a long
Close.
Way away.
He is Rhonde Barber, the Hall of Famer, hanging out with us. Chase, Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Hall of Famer Rhonde Barber in studio with us. You can catch him tomorrow at Margaritaville, the Landshark Bar and Grill on the second floor with Superbook Sports. He'll be there after the Tennessee-Virginia game, so go by and say hi. He's been nice enough to hang out with us. Now, I told you that, you know, we work with a couple of wide receivers, and, you know, they're a little chirpy, a little chatty sometimes. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, texted me and wanted me to tell you he beat you on a nine route one time. I guess it was one of the games here.
I if that happened, it definitely wasn't my fault. Safety should have been there, or Monty called the wrong defense. Or I used to joke that I've never been beaten in my life. And to be honest with you, I think I just purposely forget that I did.
So Derek Mason has told me he's never dropped a pass in his life.
Exactly.
You know, it's like the same
bad
thing.
Ball. Bad ball. Quarterback threw a bad ball.
So you had to go up against him a time or two.
Absolutely. A couple, at least 3 times I went against D May. He's a good player back then.
Yeah.
He could and he played the game kind of like I played the game. He's kind of scrappy. Obviously he was a very talented dude. But finding ways to get things done when probably, you know, football purists say he's not the right size, and I love playing against him.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. Has that set in yet? That is now forever connected to
yes.
your name?
Yes, it is. I had a party to prove it to. Yeah, I was a finalist for 6 years, semifinalist for 6 years in a row. I was a finalist for the last 3 years. So it felt inevitable, not going to lie. And I was only eligible for 6 years. So all of those years, it felt like the momentum was moving for me. But this past year, or even I should say the year before, because I thought I was going to get in last year, my presenter, Ira Kaufman, down in Tampa. It's like, nobody has anything cross to say about you in the meetings. Like, it's going to happen. It's just, when is it going to happen? When does the queue get short enough where you become top of the priority? And it was this year. So I would say that it sunk in because I've been ready for it for a long time. And knowing that I have, you know, three other guys from my defense, including my coach, so four other people that I played with in the Hall of Fame, it feels like a deserved destination for me, for considering what I did in my career. So, yes, it's sunk in.
Now,
but I'm still partying, Chase.
Well, as you should. Now, whenever you talk to your brother Tiki or call him, do you make sure to inform him that you're a Hall of Famer and he's not?
I don't have to do that anymore. but, yes, I let him know. But, you know, Tiki's got a resume that should be Hall of Fame considered. So, you know, maybe one day he'll be in that.
Could you be a coach?
No. I've been asked to be a coach many, many times. And besides the inordinate time commitment that it takes to be a coach, I don't think I have the patience to be a coach. I was a perfectionist when I played, because I had to be. Talented, yes, but like overly talented. I wasn't right. Overly big. I definitely got slower as I got along my career. But by being a perfectionist and taking time to perfect my craft, I was able to play for 16 years and not miss a game and not be replaced, which is the reason why I didn't miss a game. Because I always felt like if I let somebody else do my job,
sure,
a good chance they might end up doing my job. So it was part of what motivated me. And I don't see guys like that anymore. It's a different landscape.
They asked Mike Singletary football about doing that, and he said, I being head coach was fun. He goes, but I expect the same level of commitment that I had, and I'm not getting that. And that frustrated him. And you could see, I mean, throughout history, Hall of Famers who become head coaches, Mike Munchak was here. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Mm-hmm. You're on a different level as far as commitment and everything else, and you're not getting that. It would drive you crazy.
It would drive me absolutely nuts. And I understand. The money in the game has changed the game. If you're not feeling perfect, you don't play. That's just the way it is in the NFL nowadays. And for me, if you don't play, you're getting replaced.
Right.
And ultimately, the tolerate you till I can replace you mentality still persists in the NFL. It's just harder to get rid of guys because they make so much money nowadays. But guaranteed contracts, you know, somewhat make that more difficult. But, look, the game is it's supposed to be different because it's the biggest game in the world. Maybe outside of soccer. But definitely in the United States, because it's so consumable. It is the most consumable product on the planet.
Yes, it is.
In this country, and I love it. But the guys are definitely different. I mean, I felt like that back, you know, the guys that came before me, they were different. Now those guys that are playing now, they look at us like,
right,
oh, those guys were different. It's just the game's not the same. And I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. It's just not the same.
Who was the moment where you got in the NFL, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. I'm lined up against Michael Irvin or somebody just like you saw on TV.
Yeah. My welcome to the NFL moment was my second year, and it was a guy who was having his first year, which was Randy Moss.
Yeah.
And Randy's first game of his professional career was against us at home, wow, Minnesota. And he had like 200 yards and two touchdowns. I wasn't playing in that game, but I'm sitting there watching what I knew was a really good player out of Marshall, you know, come to the NFL and just take it over. So I saw like the burgeoning Hall of Fame career that he had. We played him twice a year for 3 years, and having to deal with that was like, okay, if we can't stop this dude, then we're not winning any football games.
So that's one of those guys that you look and go, that there's a good player and then there's special.
Yes. 100%. And he was on a team with Robert Smith as a running back. Chris Carter was the other receiver. Jake Reed, if you guys remember him,
yep,
he was
mm-hmm.
the third receiver, I guess second receiver. And they were impossible to deal with. Randall Cunningham was our quarterback that first year in 98. And you're just like, holy cow, man. Like, this is impossible to stop these guys.
It was.
But we did. We had some battles against them. But that team, and they were good for a lot of years, like 3 or 4 years. I think they went to the NFC Championship game, lost to the Giants once, and I don't think they ever made a Super Bowl.
But nope.
That was a team that you had to be able to play. So there was lots of those type of guys that I ran across, but he's the one that probably frightened me the most, to be honest with you.
All right, we got to ask you this. Chase and I talked this last hour. I think the best quarterback of all time, let's put the records out of the way, is Dan Marino. Just because the way he threw the ball, his athleticism, his accuracy.
Yeah.
I think it was. Chase says Tom Brady. There's no wrong answer here.
Yeah.
You faced all these guys.
Yeah.
Who do you consider the greatest quarterback in the NFL?
I'm biased, and I'll say it was – and I played against them all. And I played against Marino. We practiced against the Dolphins my first 2 years Tampa. And I remember – Dan Marino, however old he was at that time, 38 years old, I don't even know. But he was old, and I was like, this old quarterback. And he's slinging balls by your head, and you're just like, can I play in this league? those were that moment. He was very good. I think it was Peyton Manning, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Peyton, the way that he played the game above the neck, I've never seen. Tom was very, very good. Obviously, I saw him last 3 years in Tampa. His control of the offense and himself, more importantly, there's a reason why he won 7 championships.
Right.
But the best I played against was Peyton. And I played against him 3 different times, once in Indy, and once in Indy when he was in Tampa. He came to Tampa and beat us on that Monday night game,
yes.
Which was brutal. And that's probably why I'm biased in this regard. I also went to school with his wife, but I'm biased because the way that he beat us, nobody else beat us that way. Because it was will, determination. Obviously, he knew what the heck he was doing. He knew what you were doing before you knew it. I'll further that story by the year he went to Denver. Shiano was our head coach, and we had this plan for not tipping off anything that we were going to do against Peyton because he just figures you out. So we were this base static defense, and he's calling out stuff that we're getting ready to stem into, kind of move into, before we even do it. And I'm like,
wow.
How does he know this? how does he do this? And he was that good. But again, it's no wrong answer. I agree with you.
There's a good chance you might see him tomorrow at the game.
I'll see him tonight.
I'll
see him tonight.
Virginia is a 28-point dog.
Is that it?
Tennessee, according to the Superbook Sportsbook.
Right.
How do you go against that offense that Josh Heupel runs?
Right. That air raid offense with a whole gang of seniors on their roster.
I mean, a quarterback with a cannon.
Right.
For
I think
an arm.
I think they're only. What's his name? Squirrel?
Squirrel White?
Yeah, he's the only underclassman playing in this game. So let's start there. The Virginia's defense has a lot of return. They are also a veteran defense. They have some seniors that are back. They actually have some pretty good down linemen. I think 70% of their sack totals are back from this year. But let's be honest. Virginia was a 3-win team last year. They obviously went through a tremendous tragedy with the program, where those 3 guys were murdered on that bus. But they've rallied around themselves, and if you're a Virginia fan, that's what you're hoping this season turns into, the rallying, that one togetherness mantra that they've been pumping all offseason and preseason, you know, shows itself on the football field. But the reality is Tennessee's a really good football team, and Virginia's got a transfer quarterback. They got a running back that I think is going to be pretty good, transferred from Clemson. They got a receiver that transferred from Northwestern. You know, could it be interesting? Yeah, but the avalanche of Tennessee is going to come down on them, I think. And that's coming from a guy who, you know, bleeds, you know, blue and orange.
Yeah, for sure. Well, have fun.
Yeah,
I know
sure.
You will. Nashville, it's not hard to do.
No.
You can have fun here in Nashville. Superbook Sports, you're in town with them. And tomorrow, Margaritaville, the Landshark Bar and Grill, the lounge. After the game, people can come by and meet you, and going to be awesome. Thanks so much for doing this. This was great.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys had me on, and I'm apologize for being late.
On
behalf of my navigator.
It's all good. It's
appreciate
all good.
You. Thank you. It's
Hall
an
of
honor.
Famer Rhonde Barber in studio with us. We'll give you some picks coming up next with Lee Sterling here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.